As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We have a full house of Carl, Andy and Laurie together to reflect on that defeat for Manchester United against Fulham on Saturday. We've got a little bit to round up on Erik ten Hag's future and also an FA Cup tie against Nottingham Forest, which feels pretty important now, to be fair, as well. So, good morning, gentlemen. Carl, you were at Old Trafford, which usually is a good thing. I don't know if it was on Saturday or not. So I'll speak to you in a moment about things. But Andy, I'm guessing from your pictures, you weren't at the Theatre of Dreams.
No, I wasn't. I was in Africa, mate.
Of course.
As you do.
Yeah, I was in Tunisia. I went to write about a game between two of the biggest clubs in Africa. So I watched the match on Arabic TV. I arrived at my hotel an hour before kickoff in Tunis. And I'm thinking, I've got to see the match. And the guy in reception said, Manchester Fulham. So I thought, result, put it on. It's all in Arabic. Don't quite speak Arabic, but I could get a gist of what they were saying. And it was not complimentary whatsoever.
No.
About Manchester United. But I could see it with my own eyes. We all could. So yeah, it was an interesting place. Football's big there. Crazy fans, great atmosphere. I've been on the road for 4 days. I've been in Switzerland, Germany, Holland, bits of Manchester United related stuff as well. I'm happy as Larry, me mate, travelling around on a train around Europe.
Yeah,
I bump into interesting people. I met a German weather forecaster on a train the other day. I was talking to her, she's dead interesting, so I missed my stop in Arnhem. I wanted to go off at Arnhem to see a bridge too far, but I ended up in Utrecht, which is really beautiful.
This is it. I saw you in Utrecht and I went, oh, you're doing a big Ten Hag read, because obviously he used to manage.
No,
there,
Carl is on a train. Talking to
no, I stayed in. Yeah, I went to watch Utrecht. It'll all become clear, boys. I mean, the type of journalism I'd like to do if I have the time is I like to meet people face to face. I put a lot of effort into doing that. I think the Athletic always encourages that type of stuff if possible. And if I'm on a train, Europe's amazing because you've got all these beautiful cities, really well connected. You're travelling this time of year, it's not particularly expensive. Open up your computer, you can write away. I watched Eintracht Frankfurt the other night. I was on this mad terrace full of ultras. You're not allowed to take a picture. No videos, big signs as you walked in. So what you can do for take a picture? You're gonna batter me because I'm saying nice things about the atmosphere here. Okay, just be discreet. Okay then. But that was good. And I went to another game.
Did you see Donny van der Beek?
In theory, he plays for Eintracht Frankfurt, doesn't he? But in theory, he played for Manchester United as well. So obviously, he didn't play on Thursday night as Eintracht Frankfurt crashed out of the European competition that they were in.
Yeah, Donny didn't even make the squad. There was an apology for it as well. We'll get to it in another episode about some of these loanees, I think.
Yeah, sounds like an international break topic, maybe.
Yeah. Frankfurt, underrated city. Might do a piece on underrated European cities. Utrecht would qualify. Turin would definitely qualify. Not just about the tourist traps. So yeah, I might investigate more into these areas. Carry on, boys.
This is nice, Laurie, because it takes our mind off what was a pretty abject Saturday, really, wasn't it?
I know, how much longer can we keep going with this so that we don't actually have to talk about what we witnessed at Old Trafford? Yeah, no, I think we probably have to get in there, don't we, given the podcast is about Manchester United, not Andy's travels around Europe, which, as delightful as they sound...
I don't know, what is the podcast about?
Yeah, no, it was a long tangent to start the whole thing. I mean, Andy's tangents are obviously part of the selling point of this pod, but I guess we do have to discuss the football at some stage.
Yeah.
Carl, you were there, so you can obviously give us the kind of full appreciation of that performance, but yeah, it wasn't good, was it? United have ridden their luck, haven't they, in the last few games, and the luck ran out against a pretty well-drilled Fulham team, which had players missing. It wasn't even like it was a full-strength Fulham team.
Six changes, that team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Muniz is a really good striker, isn't he? He's obviously coming through nicely for them, sort of physicality that he's got and the smarts that he's got. But yeah, for United to... They show character, I do agree with that. I think they tried, just props the quality isn't there, really, and the rhythm isn't there. But to get back level and then go and lose the game is really bad. The only thing I would say on that, I suppose, is that Ten Hag doesn't really draw often, does he? So he will try and win a game, knowing that that's much more valuable than drawing it. And that obviously brings the jeopardy of potentially losing it. But it did feel, you know, a real sucker punch to have got level and then to actually go and lose the game.
I think Gary Neville's done Ten Hag a massive favour by calling Chelsea blue billionaire bottle jobs. Because a lot of the conversation this morning on watching Sky Sports News and everything else is all about Chelsea and not about how Manchester United have given up 100 shots on their goal in the last five games. Erik ten Hag has cited injury and will cite injury, and he was asked after the Fulham game about the fact that it's a year on from the League Cup triumph and the team hasn't improved, and he sort of gave a, you know why the team hasn't improved. But what you're seeing is the same 20 to 30 minutes of frantic football where midfield is just completely bypassed. And it's deeply concerning. The way Erik ten Hag wants to play football works, air quote, asterisk, footnote, if you have two or three individuals in key areas of the field that are going to win their one-on-one battles. This is why Luke Shaw is so important, because he wins his one-on-one battles and he's better than the opposite man when it comes to progressing the ball. This is why Casemiro last season was so important, because when the counter-attack was on, Casemiro found a way to, you know, put in an elbow or drop a play without getting a booking. This is why Lisandro Martinez is so important, because when that counter-attack happens, Martinez is the one to shoot out the back four to put in a tackle and win the ball back. And I watched that Fulham goal. It starts from a throw-in in the Fulham half and the ball bobbles around a bit and Adama Traore just barges off Christian Eriksen, who has become a physical non-entity, to be really mean about. He cannot tackle. He cannot stop a player who's barreling through towards goal. And then he got an extra half yard on Harry Maguire. And Maguire, bless him, he had a pretty good game on Saturday, but he was never going to catch up to Traore in full flight. So then you're on the back foot and the ball gets switched over to Iwobi, and he had so much space to get the ball on his right foot and have the shot. The reaction of three of the attacking players when that Fulham winner went in was quite telling. Bruno Fernandes was jumping up and down, saying words to the effect of, for F's sake. Garnacho just completely collapsed to the floor. Marcus Rashford slumped down and his hands were on his knees. And so they were all absolutely gutted that this goal had come in. But also, I can't tell you Manchester United deserved to win that game.
They didn't. Fulham were good right from the start. And again, it wasn't a one-off. This is repeat behaviour that we're seeing. And when we heard on Friday that Højlund was going to play...
Was not going to play, yeah.
I think everyone thought, oh no.
Absolutely. It popped the bubble, didn't it, really?
It totally did. And on top of Luke Shaw, on top of Martinez, you can't go to your backup strikers because Anthony Martial is... He's never available to play, and your confidence in beating a team like Fulham drops a bit. But still, Fulham had won one game away from home. Their away record really poor, and as the lads have said, they were also missing players, but they were the better team throughout.
Marco Silva, he was asked a tactical question about midfield in his press conference afterwards, and he explained what Fulham did differently. So, you know, we didn't have Yao Palhinha, so a lot of the game plan was dropping Andreas Pereira deeper in the pivot to sit next to Harrison Reed. And Alex Rowe would come in a bit tighter to make sure they won that midfield battle. That was really important to Fulham, was if you're really strong in the middle, you force United out wide. And United right now, when you've got Victor Lindelof at left back and you've got Garnacho at left wing, that partnership doesn't really work because Lindelof doesn't really want to cross the halfway line. And on the right-hand side, Dalot's improved a lot, but you have Amari Forson at right wing and He has a lot of nice touches in the first 15 minutes, but is a teenager. And there were two or three times when the Fulham defender just went, all right, I'm just going to push you over because I'm a lot stronger than you. Rashford, we've seen his struggles at centre forward. I know two or three times where he was trying to play with his back towards goal against Calvin Bassey. That's exactly what Calvin Bassey wants. He relishes that sort of battle. So Rashford was largely anonymous as well. Just completely nullified. Couldn't get through the middle. Nothing out wide. And any balls over the top weren't going to be collected by any of those front three. So United were defanged.
The Rashford thing really didn't work, did it? I mean, he's a left winger, and you got a brilliant contrast of Muniz with Rashford in terms of Muniz wanted that physical contact. He wanted to feel the defender and then bully them, like Hoyland has been doing for United. You know, that hold-up play at Luton was such a crucial element in United having those counter-attacks second half and being able to break. You just don't get that with Rashford. He's just not that kind of player. And I think that then just meant that all United attacks didn't really have that potency that you'd like. And I agree with you on Force. I think he's clearly a very technical player. And interesting that Ten Hag chose him ahead of, you know, Ahmad or even Antony, which we can get a bit more into. But it just didn't have that drive, I suppose, that you want from a winger. You know, I thought Garnacho kept trying. He was the likely scorer, certainly in the first half for United. But it just, there was no real kind of sense of how United were going to score a goal against Fulham. And obviously, in the end, it was Bruno having a shot, parried by Leno, and Maguire tapping into an empty net, and then United suddenly realised Leno keeps parrying these shots, let's just keep shooting from distance. And it nearly, you know, that chaos nearly created another chance or another goal. But it does feel like often with United, even in this run, the goals come from kind of slightly curious situations. So obviously Hoyland benefiting from a mistake at Luton, and then a kind of shanked shot from Garnacho. The one at Wolves, I guess, is really nice play from Mainoo, but it's an individual moment of brilliance. I would say probably McTominay's at Villa was a good team move. That was a, you know, well built up, and obviously Hoyland's goal before that was a sort of set piece routine. So there's glimmers, I suppose, but quite often it feels like these goals happen just as a spasm of kind of event, United forcing their way into the box, which is great, but it's not really a sustainable mode of scoring goals.
I think Marco Silva has said it on this pod before. I think he's an exceptional coach. Andreas Pereira is not unhappy at how the way things went at Old Trafford on Saturday. There was a feeling among the Fulham players that they played really well in the FA Cup last year at Old Trafford before that sending off, before it got a bit stupid, that they actually deserved to win that game. There was a feeling among the Fulham players that they didn't deserve to lose at Craven Cottage in November. Remember with Bruno, back to the time when Bruno scored goals in football matches late on in that match. So they came pretty vengeful, and they had a very good tactical plan. Forget about the defeat. The way that Manchester United plays really, really worries me. I know that players are missing, but even when the Ten Hag's perfect 11 started the season against Wolves, they were still getting shredded in midfield. And I think if you're watching Manchester United and you're Ineos, you're thinking, is this a man to take the team forward? I think his future is really in play at the moment. And we'd had that good run of five victories. To Jim Ratcliffe referenced that. Optimism was building, partly because of the deal being concluded as well. But what a slump on Saturday. I was watching from afar. I wasn't in the stadium, so I'm not best to comment on what the reaction was from United fans. But you've got to be beating Fulham at home. This team cannot be finishing the season in sixth or seventh, because if they do, then I worry about Ten Hag's job. But when I watch his teams, I worry about them anyway. The mid-game management does not convince me. You could see right from the start, Fulham were dangerous from the first 5 minutes. You got 85 minutes to rectify what was going on here. And he said after the game, I'm translating now from my Arabic, we missed Casemiro. I'm sorry, I just didn't think Casemiro was playing well. I disagree with him. He's the football manager, not me, but I know what I saw with my own eyes on a tiny TV in the corner of an African capital city, and Casemiro was not playing well.
This is the really intriguing thing about Ten Hag's methodology, is that so much of what was good last season was on Casemiro, Martinez, Shaw, Rashford being in a purple patch, and those players have either been injured or have not been as good as last season for various reasons. And you're right, Casemiro, for the majority of the time he was on the field, was not very good. part of that is because of the way the midfield is set up, and there's just far too much space for Casemiro to cover, and he's 31 years of age and he's trying to run around the place like he's 26. Part of that is also because Casemiro just, I don't want to say his legs have gone, but he's also just making some really strange decisions on the field. So he goes off 52nd minute due to a clash here to Harrison Reed, bandage full of blood as he walks off, goes straight down the tunnel, and your substitute choices are Forson comes off, Bruno Fernandes goes up wide, and Scott McTominay goes in as number 10. And then with Casemiro off, Christian Eriksen goes in to join Mainoo in central midfield. I was next to Pete Rutzler, the Fulham and PSG correspondent. And about 5 minutes after that change, he just went to me, your midfield is like a burger without the patty. There's no strength to it anymore. We know when you start Eriksen, he tires after an hour and he's not full of defensive heft. And I think it's really telling. You know, you've got Sofyan Amrabat, who is at Manchester United, I want to say largely because of his former playing relationship with Erik ten Hag. You've got Antony, who was on the bench and is also there in part because ten Hag knows him. And it says a lot that at this point in time, neither man was being brought on to solve the situation. Ten Hag can say the Fulham game was lost because there were loads of injuries and injuries have affected the season. However, decisions he's made since basically July have led to this situation. Why don't you have a proper backup to Casemiro? Because the person you thought was going to be the backup has unfortunately not been anywhere near Premier League place. Why was your front three not the way it was? Okay, Hoyland's injured, but also you spent a lot of money for someone on the right-hand side that clearly is just nowhere near good enough. There's one thing being dealt a bad poker hand. He's also playing it quite badly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think the other thing with the injuries as well, I mean, it's a legitimate concern that you lose sort of key players. You know, Hoyland being lost in training at the end of the week is a massive blow and a late blow, and it's hard to adapt from that. I understand that. But Martinez and Shaw have been missing for vast swathes of this season. You can't just say every single week that our important players are injured. I understand that not having a left back at the moment is particularly unlucky when you consider that, you know, even if Wan-Bissaka was fit, Dalot would play on that side. Obviously, Malacia has been out for the season as well. But they've had a long time to try and work something out to solve the solution of the problems that that's caused. And, you know, it's still being blamed in late February for Manchester United having defeats. The shots as well, Carl, you mentioned it before, 100 shots in, what was it, the last five Premier League games?
Mm-hmm.
133 shots in 7 matches that Adam Crafton referenced in his tweet over the weekend. 22 against Luton, which was the highest they've ever had in a Premier League game. 23 against Villa, 22 against West Ham, 16 against Wolves, 16 against Tottenham, 17 against Newport. Laurie, is it just me, or are you sort of looking ahead at next weekend and thinking, oh dear.
We're going there already, are we?
Well, I don't want to. But when you see that number of shots being conceded against sides like Newport, Fulham and Luton.
Yes, Manchester City will have a lot of shots against Manchester United. I think we can guarantee that.
How many, Laurie? 115?
They'll have 20 plus, won't they?
You didn't get that, did you?
Sorry. I was too slow. I started answering the question before he'd finished it with his number. I watched City at Bournemouth and they were all right. There was a good first half, but second half, so I'm kind of clinging to that.
They're all right at the moment. Yeah,
yeah, they're not fully firing, are they? But then again, you sort of felt that maybe they weren't fully firing last season and they ended up winning 6-3 in a game that could have been, you know, 10-1 really. So yeah, it does present a daunting prospect for United. To touch on Carl's points and yours, Ian, I think that Ten Hag has got to a stage where he's basically just, it's pragmatic, it's an attempt to try and get a result any which way you can. I think style is out the window. And yeah, how much sympathy do you give a situation that clearly is from a lack of preparation from the whole club? You know, obviously Ten Hag has selected a lot of these players, but, you know, clearly, you know, it's not him sort of writing the cheque for Antony, for example. He wanted a striker that summer. United didn't get him a striker. And then it basically got to the point of the window where he was like, right, I need an attacker, please. And that was the price that they had to pay to Ajax to get Antony. So, and then within that, you know, you got Malacia being out for the whole season. I mean, no one would have predicted that, right? You think, okay, we've bought a backup left back. Yeah.
But, and the Martinez thing's unlucky. And I suppose the Luke Shaw thing, maybe lesser so. But
well, this is it. The Luke Shaw and the Hoyland things, how much luck is there? Because obviously they're muscle injuries. Could you, I don't know how it is in training in the week. You know, is there any chance of just reducing that so you keep them protected? Ten Hag will probably rightly say, well, you know, you need to train at intensity so that you're ready for a game. You know, we're forever told about the stories under Sir Alex Ferguson where training was the hardest part of the week for the players. So, you know, are you really going to ease up on the intensity just so that, you know, you can kind of wrap somebody in cotton wool? But it felt ahead of the game and really interesting dynamic because you had the press conference on Friday where it was revealed, you know, just before we went in that Hoyland was injured. And then the questions start on, well, you know, you've got Anthony Martial, why didn't you try and sell him? Why didn't you buy another striker last summer? And Ten Hag came out fighting. It was pretty combative. He was saying, you're naive to think that we could have signed a striker as well as Hoyland last summer. You're naive to think that, you know, you could basically push Anthony Martial to the sidelines because he's on a lot of money. You know, that was the first time he'd kind of said that in such blunt terms. You know, admitted that Martial's wage, which we think is about 240 grand a week, you know, basically feeds into, you know, whether he's selected or not and whether United can actually then get somebody else in or not. Because basically you can't really sell him because he's not going to go. He's not going to take less money at another club. So you have to kind of use him. And Ten Hag sort of referenced the fact that actually he was pretty good at Everton and he did bits last season that were good. So I'm trying to use him in a way. But ultimately it's a very unsatisfactory situation. And this is the kind of thing that Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Sir Dave Brailsford need to fix so that you're not plunged into desperation because of one, you know, calf injury to a 20-year-old striker that, you know, you were kind of hoping to integrate into the Premier League in a steady fashion.
Yeah, Andy, the thing with that as well, it does feed into some of the comments that Sir Jim Ratcliffe made last week. We didn't really talk about his opinion on Erik ten Hag and also his opinion on transfers for Manchester United moving forward. But he did say that he didn't want the focus to be on the manager. He wanted the focus to be on the structure. And he said that, you know, over the years, there's been a lot of good coaches at Manchester United, good managers at Manchester United. They can't all have been poor for the club to have underperformed in the way that they have. So he wanted the focus to be on the way that things were set up above the manager, around the manager. So where do you fall on this debate?
I get that, but the manager has had a huge level of power in the decision-making process since he joined. So you can't comment on the players without commenting on the manager. And because of FFP, your players have almost got to work. And I know signing footballers is not an exact science. Sir Alex Ferguson signed enough who didn't work out at all. But when it becomes the majority not working out, that's when it becomes an issue. And if you're going to spend a huge amount on Anthony Santos and it doesn't work out, combine that with Anthony Martial seldom being able to play, suddenly you've got a really complicated situation. And I like the fact that he came back and started talking about FFP. You didn't have this in the past. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson could go out and bring in a player. And even last January, a couple of loan signings came in. And he's struggling now. But the signings are also on him. If he had a sports director with a lot of power, as he had at Ajax, as is normal at most European football clubs, I don't think he would have signed all the players that he ended up bringing into Manchester United. He's had a huge amount of power, and I know the coach always gets a veto. I know Ole Gunnar always had the veto, but it's not just about that. I know that they've gone for players. And if you've got three people pushing back against you, even though you might have the final say, it's very difficult when you've got to work with these people every single day. His signings look good a year ago. You know, a year ago, we were walking out of Wembley. It was exactly a year ago. We were all buzzing. We'd seen Manchester United win a trophy. Life was good, and it ain't so good now. And Ten Hag's stock has dropped significantly. You live or die by your signings. You live or die by your results as a football manager, and results have not been good enough. That's why I think that he's under pressure, and there'll be more scrutiny into the recruitment, of which he's played a big part in.
Yeah, Carl, the other way of looking at the comments by Sir Jim Ratcliffe was they weren't exactly backing Erik ten Hag either, were they?
No, and I've said on this podcast before that Ten Hag, for better or worse, is an interim manager. He's interviewing for his job right now. This is the concerning thing. I was given the last question at the end of the press conference after Fulham, and I said, you keep talking about routines and how hard it has been to get your routines consistent due to all these injuries. And I said, have you ever considered changing your routines or making them easier? And he said, no, because the principles and the routines remain the same. Certain players come with different qualities, but the underlying principles are the same thing. And this is why throughout the last couple of weeks, I may have been a negative Nelly on this podcast compared to everyone else, because I can't see Ten Hag changing. I can't see Manchester United turning up next week and not being absolutely open in midfield. I can't see Ten Hag fixing this really disjointed front press. I can't see a situation improving down that left-hand side until someone comes back and plays at left-back who isn't Victor Lindelof. United are going to play the same way between now and the end of the season, and I don't think that is good enough to make up the however many points between 6th and 4th. 5th place, all right, maybe. You can have a little joke about Spurs doing an implosion, but you're going to need a massive favour from teams outside to catch up. There are too many important players are injured. There are too many points to make up. And frankly, there are too few, air quotes, winnable games between now and the end of the season for me to think United are going to finish in the Champions League. It's a real dogfight. And I don't know if Ten Hag is unable or unwilling to change the system. I don't think he's being pragmatic. Pragmatism is looking at your squad and going, based on who's available, this is the most effective way to try and get a win. You've not got a defensive midfielder who can cover ground. You've not really got a fit striker outside Højlund. This high-intensity counter-attacking football is getting you done week in, week out. You need to hunker down. And he just doesn't want to do it.
So what are you saying, Carl? What is the solution? Because who can he play at left back? Who can he play up front?
That is a bit of an issue, isn't it?
Who does he play in central midfield?
And this is where I'm really sorry, right? I don't know. I looked at that starting lineup against Fulham and I went, yeah, that's fine. That's about right. I was happy with that starting lineup. And the problem now isn't on the starting lineup. The problem is this transition heavy style that he wants to do.
So what you're saying is basically just defend, just have, you know, two banks of four, maybe, you know, back five or something. That's the only... I'm not absolving Ten Hag of blame here. Clearly he's got massive scrutiny on him for the team that he's putting out, for the way perhaps he communicates in training, for the kind of, you know, just environment that he creates. But I would also say that I think he's trying to do things the right way in terms of instilling, you know, that kind of discipline and what have you. But I still feel like it's not a simple solution. So I think
I think
people sort of saying just do this, it's not like he's not thought of these kind of things, I don't think.
I agree with you. And this is why it's really difficult. United have to play Forest on Wednesday. They've got the derby. I don't think there's enough time to come up with a dramatically different tactical plan. And maybe that's why he's persisting with counterattacks, because you'll probably win more games than you lose with this counterattacking system, because due to the amount of money United have, they tend to have better players than most teams in the league. It only really becomes a problem when your better players are injured or the other team has better players. So this is what you saw against Luton. They just went, we'll do the same thing Luton are doing. We've got a £70 million striker, so now we've got more goals than you. You can't get in the Champions League doing this style of football. I don't think. It made sense to do a transition-heavy style of football when Bruno Fernandes was in great form, when Marcus Rashford was in great form, and when Casemiro could cover ground. Very early in the season, when Brighton and Tottenham Hotspur are just playing around you, oppressed by making the centre-backs wider, he should have been more adaptable. And he persisted with this style of football that has got more chaotic and more rigid over time, and now we're just stuck. How does this get better unless a better player comes off from the medical room?
Well, this is it. I think ultimately, and sorry, I know we're going back and forth here, but
yeah.
I mean, you look at, and I'm not saying that he's like Mikel Arteta or Arsenal or even Pep Guardiola at City, clearly not, but those guys both struggled very early on in their careers at those clubs. And, you know, Arteta out was the big thing after a couple of seasons, wasn't it? We had lost the first three games of the season. Guardiola was being mocked because he didn't coach tackles. And both of those managers doubled down. They didn't sort of deviate. And Ten Hag has compromised. You know, he's obviously, you know, you go back to that Liverpool game where De Gea went long rather than pass out from the back. He realises in crucial moments that I think he needs to tweak things so that, you know, they are a little bit more resistant. But I think, I agree with you, Carl, I think that actually he's probably just thought, well, you know, if it's going to be end-to-end stuff, we've got better players generally. We can probably score more goals than the opposition. So this is perhaps my best form of defence, to kind of just make it a little bit crazy, allow a bit more space so that we can then counter and, you know, hopefully score more goals. And I totally accept the point that at the end of the season, Ineos will look at the situation and evaluate everything. But I don't think it's as straightforward as saying, you know, Ten Hag's massively failing, Ten Hag out, let's get the next guy in.
I want him to stay. I want it to work out for him. I've seen evidence only this month with Cobby and Garnacho and Hoyland and even Rashford at times, although he's had a poor season, and thought, okay, I can see what's going to could work here with a couple more supplements, but it was a struggle. It was a bad result. And then you're moving forward, a huge cup game at Nottingham Forest, and there's a game at the weekend which we're all going to go, ugh. Just disappointing. On Saturday, had a lad come to pick me up at the hotel. He was going to take me to the stadium in this game. He said, I'm coming at this time. I said, I've got to watch Man United, mate. He said, no, you, I've got to collect you. So we agreed on a time, which was the 90th minute. So he turns up at my hotel. I'm watching the game on Arabic. I go down to reception. Harry Maguire scores. Get in there. Hey, mate, nice to meet you for the first time in my life. Get in there. Jump into his car. I said, I need to watch Man United. So he... This is how powerful the Premier League is. It's on live Tunisian TV. So I'm driving through the streets of Tunis watching Man United on this fella's phone who I've only just met. Okay, that's where the uprising started in 2011. Nice one. Go on, Harry. And then he takes me to meet some of his colleagues and he's like, Andy, this guy. And I'm looking at these fantastic looking Tunisian men who... Former international player, 62 appearances for his country. Aye, mate, nice to meet. Oh, come on. Oh, no, this is... Sorry, mate. Yeah, I'm here to write about the football game that I've come to your country to watch. This guy is in charge of this and that. Aye, mate. Oh. Drives you mad, doesn't it? Drives you mad, Manchester United. They drive you absolutely crazy. It's why we love football, but it's also why we hate football. And Fulham... Go and score the winner. Anyway, mate, I'm Andy. Nice to meet you. Sorry about the last 15 minutes. I wasn't expecting 9 minutes of time added on, but obviously the rules have changed and here we are, mate. What's that statue over there, by the way? Oh, nice one.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right, well, this was the point in the podcast where we were supposed to be talking about the renovation of Old Trafford, speaking about Andy's article on The Athletic, where he performed a complete U-turn, actually, from hoping that Manchester United renovated the existing stadium to now thinking that a new stadium is the way forward. But unfortunately, the three of them got very passionate about Ten Hag and the situation after that game against Fulham at the weekend. And we've not got time, but I promise you faithfully, we will talk in depth about the whole stadium stuff on a future podcast, including and his U-turn, because he doesn't often perform U-turns. But we need to preview Nottingham Forest. Right. Were you there in 1990, Andy, when Mark Robin scored that goal in the FA Cup, which essentially saves for Alex Ferguson his job?
I've not done a U-turn, but I'll leave that for one side. No, I wasn't there, mate. Why?
Obviously, it was a very memorable FA Cup tie away at Nottingham Forest. I mean,
I couldn't afford to go. I was earning £1.40 an hour working at Shoe Fair in Urmston, and I couldn't afford to go. And the boyfriend of the manager of the shoe shop, he showed me his ticket stub, and I was so envious. And I didn't go. I went to four of the games in that cup run that year. I was 16 years old. I couldn't afford to go, and I'm gutted that I didn't go.
Well, I know why you couldn't afford it as well. A bit of an explainer here. We did know this, that Andy wasn't there, and he'd explained exactly why in the WhatsApp group, but he admitted that he'd not sold enough hosiery to get his bonus.
Oh, I can't believe.
Money.
So as well as me £1.40, they said you can get 20% commission on any hosiery. Have I even said that right? I didn't even know what it was. Hosiery.
Yeah.
Hosiery. Right? That's like tights and stockings. I'm 16 years old. I'm being asked to sell stockings to my mum's mates who are coming in, and of which, if I sell a pair of tights, I get like 14p. This isn't a happy stage in my life. I want to be at Nottingham Forest away to see Mark Robbins, and instead I'm selling shoes for 12 quid and saying, and would you like some whatever hosiery is? I still don't even know to this day, all these years later, at Shoe Fair in Urmston, with the manager on my case saying that you've not been selling enough hosiery.
And
there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't go to Forest.
Okay, we've established that then. So I'll ask it a different way, Carl. Who's going to be Erik ten Hag's Mark Robbins?
Garnacho is looking like the most likely player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Ten Hag was very insistent that Garnacho did beat the goalkeeper and had a shot cleared off the line against Fulham. Something that I do like about Garnacho, especially in the second half of games, is despite his size, he does get you yards in those moments where he just sort of drags the team 4 or 5 yards up, makes a run, goes down, wins a free kick and whatnot. So he is a shining light, perhaps too much. He's important, and he will be important in this Forest game. I also think this might be a time for one of, this might be the Sofyan Amrabat game if Casemiro's still head is injured. Like, it's now or never, mate.
Obviously, United have already lost there this season as well, Laurie, and that was without Rasmus Højlund, who was injured for the league game at the end of December. What gives you the confidence that it might be different going to the City ground this week?
Am I confident? I mean, anything can happen in an FA Cup tie. United will have a bigger allocation than they did. Am I right in saying that, Andy? I don't know if you know the exact number than they did it in the league game. And usually United, you know, under Ten Hag do have this kind of response in them where they flicker into life. And I did watch the highlights of Villa v Forest, and Forest were pretty open. So that was a game where clearly Villa went for them. They were also open at the back themselves, but they ended up winning 4-2. So, and they had more chances than that as well. So, you know, if Nuno persists in playing a centre-back at left-back like Erik ten Hag is doing, then maybe Garnacho will have a bit of a better run if he's on the right.
If he plays on the right, yeah.
Yeah, we were debating this, weren't we, in the WhatsApp group before kick-off, because we knew that Forsen was going to start. You know, if we can give ourselves a little bit of a hat tip on the night previous, that we got the word that Forsen was going to start. And I have to give a credit actually to Academy Scoop, this Twitter account that nailed that first, actually. But we were sort of I was told that he was sort of predominantly on the left, Forsen, and that Rashford was probably going to start up top. But we thought, why would you shift Rashford out from the left? And Garnacho's been doing well on the right. So maybe that's still to be worked out. Although as the game progressed, Forsen did appear at centre forward at times, didn't he? Just in a kind of natural rotation.
Do you know, in the first half, Ten Hag, because he's obviously just in front of us where I sit on a match day for the pitch side stuff, he kept telling him about pushing inside, you know, and it was filling the lad's head, you know, in those first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, because he wasn't in quite the right position. And he was telling him, keep pushing in. And I just thought...
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I just thought that
you got too much?
Well, maybe, I don't know. I have no idea how sort of technically and tactically adapt Amari Forson is, but I just thought a young lad like that making his debut, it's his first ever senior start, clearly they've got to have specific roles and they've got to have information that they take on and play with, because obviously it's a full tactical picture. It's not just about the one player. But yeah, I did wonder at the time about how much you should free up a young lad like that making his debut rather than giving him this really specific info that obviously you're going to really press home by then telling him in game what to do as well.
And I'm told his best work is done in that kind of inside channel, so whether it was just Ten Hag giving him the license, giving him the encouragement to go in there rather than have to stick out wide, I don't know. But I agree with you, it must be a delicate balance, right? But I do remember, you know, back during the lockdown days where you had Kieran McKenna on the touchline screaming at the different forwards to kind of press in different ways, you know, he really was sort of on top of them to try and instruct them. So, but it is, you're right, if it's his debut, I guess you'd hope that Ten Hag knows how to draw response out of him. You know, we remember him from pre-season, didn't we, where he subbed him at sort of 37 minutes in the Dortmund friendly in Las Vegas because he lost his head a bit, and Ten Hag then had a sort of word with him on the touchline in front of everybody to kind of make that point to him. So maybe he feels that he's that kind of character that can respond to kind of, you know, direct
dialogue. He's backing him as well, isn't he? I mean, he's starting him ahead of Ahmad, who, you know, is championed a lot by Manchester United fans. He's starting him against a very expensive player in Antony, who obviously he brought in as well. There's no question, Carl, that there's proper support for Amari Forson, and he was a hugely surprising name in that starting 11, but that's because Ten Hag wanted to do it. He obviously thought that he was more suited to that match than the other players he had on the bench.
Absolutely. He was asked about Antony after the result, and he said, you know, Antony's not quite at the right place. He said he believes Ahmad is training very well. He believes Forson is a legitimate option as well. You know, it was Antony's birthday on Saturday. And
he still would have had a party, I can guarantee you that. There's no way he's cancelling his party. No chance.
Well, he came on at left back in the end, didn't he? Am I right in saying that? He looked he like did. He was left.
And Ten Hag said Antony to step up his level. So,
which actually is not a thing to mention in passing, because even when he was struggling earlier parts of this season, if not last season, he was hugely backed by Ten Hag. There was certainly nothing like that coming out of his mouth.
It's an interesting one. I watched that United game and I went, oh, it's a real shame X and Y and Z aren't available. I watched that 96 minutes and at no point did I go, Antony would change this. That's me being, you can say that's a very mean opinion there. And Ten Hag will say his options are limited by the injuries. I do also feel he wouldn't be as limited in his options if he hadn't opted for certain players in the summer transfer windows, plural, than these. You know, again, you're looking at, no one could have foreseen Mason Mount would spend this much of this season injured. However, when Mason Mount was being linked to Manchester United, I think we're all on this podcast with a raised eyebrow going, is Mason Mount the player they need right now? But it is interesting. I'm sure Antony Elanga is looking forward to the return of Manchester United again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on, won't it? Andy won't be singing his song this time. There's no question about that. What does he do for this game, Andy? Do you see him making huge changes to what the set was against Fulham? It's unlikely he's going to have anyone back fit for the game, certainly.
Don't lose.
Yeah.
A draw. Forest have drawn both of their FA Cup ties so far. They went to replays against Blackpool, Bristol City.
Well, we can't draw.
It's got to go out.
There's no replays. Yeah. It's penalties, if not.
You go out the FA Cup, the mood will just... it will slump. It's Manchester United's only chance of winning a trophy this season. If Erik ten Hag can win it, it'd be a huge deal. Forest in the league was probably the low point of this season. I wrote my strongest article criticising what was going on after that game. Forest have won one of the six league games since then. So this isn't a top Forest team.
Not mentioned that yet.
Andy, to be clear, the way you're talking makes it sound as if you absolutely want Manchester United to win this game against Forest. You want United to get a cup run for as long as possible. That in your mind, a cup run helps United improve in their league as well.
Yeah.
Laurie, prioritise the cup. Don't mind losing the cup so you can focus on the league. Where do you stand right now?
Yeah, you have to win in the cup, don't you? Because I think just otherwise, the mood darkens, the pressure on Ten Hag increases. I mean, he is presenting a very strong front, isn't he? When we're when we ask him about the Ineos situation, he says, I'm very aligned with them. I've had conversations with them. You know, and what Ratcliffe said in that piece was about the environment, wasn't it, that a manager's been working in. So they all seem to be on the same page there. It's just ultimately the question will come, are you the best guy for us to lead us forward? You know, I would still say yes when you look at the other options out there. But I do think that the FA Cup is, you can't just toss it away because it's wins, you know, create a positive mood and positive feel that can seep into the Premier League. So, yeah, I don't think we're at a point where United need to be sort of losing games to kind of keep them fresh for the Premier League.
What do you think, Carl?
No, I absolutely think United need to win the FA Cup. I think if you have two negative results,
yeah,
between now and
exactly
next Monday,
what I was about to say,
things will be very bleak and the clouds will be here and we'll be using the C word again. Crisis.
I'm glad you clarified.
1990, I know everyone goes back to it. I know there are similarities, not least because the team kept getting drawn away from home that year, as has happened this year. But it was a point of inflection, and it could be this year. I still won't fancy Manchester United's chances in another final against Manchester City. Is City still in it? I've stopped paying attention to them.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are. Well, there we go. You've got to win. Football's about, it's glory, glory, Man United. It's about trophies. It's about trips to Wembley. This season finished with a victory at Wembley, then the season ends with a smile and go on, Eric, do your stuff over the summer and away we go. If it doesn't, then you have the end of season drift that you had in the first Ferguson years where attendances were falling right down because you've got nothing to play for.
Yeah.
And that's my worry.
Okay. It feels like a very important week, doesn't it, again, for Manchester United. It's incredible what one result can do to completely change the mood and change the tone of this podcast as well. But thank you, as always, for being with us. Thank you, Carl, Andy and Laurie as well. If you want to have a say on anything that we've talked about, you want to ask questions to the boys as well, remember the email address, devilspod@theathletic.com. But again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one after Forest. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.